Well, good morning. This is the first podcast of the last day of the pandemic year of 2020. This is Henry Nyman, and I'm kind of giving an update on what happened yesterday. It was a record year yesterday in the U.S. for fatalities. It's not even full accounting yet, but there was over 3,750 deaths in the U.S., which is the high for the way I'm keeping score. The highest prior one was something like 3,620 or so. And yesterday, or the day before yesterday, now it had come pretty close to that. And so it's really been high number of deaths. And unfortunately, these records are not going to last. They're going to be gone probably in the first week of January, if not tomorrow. But we're at 3,750 today. Yesterday, we were at 3,587. So yesterday was almost a record. But today definitely is, and it might get a little bit higher with California still got a little bit more to go as far as reporting. Yesterday was a busy day. I've been keeping a map on the variants. The variants have certainly been in the news, and the map I've got really is of the sequences. So, some people are saying, oh, where's the U.S. Variant from Colorado? That was yesterday. It's still not on the map. They're not really updating it. But it wasn't on the map because the sequence wasn't released. The sequence actually was released today. And actually got up on the map with San Diego County before it was even announced, really. They were holding a press conference, and there had been a tweet that basically said that the sequence was public and it was going to be a GSAD and gene bank. And I dug around GSAD and found it. I'm not sure. I'd searched for it previously. It didn't come up. So I don't know if they just got it on, but I actually had it before the San Diego County was mentioned in the press conference. And that's my old stomping grounds, actually, Scripps Clinic and North County in San Diego County. I'm not sure if this case was in North County, but it was in San Diego County. And it was just, I just got the sample, I think yesterday or 2 days ago now. And I had the sample completed like at 2 a.m. or something. And anyway, if you didn't hear the earlier podcast or didn't get caught up on the news, the sample came from a 30-year-old male who had no history of travel. And so nobody really knows exactly how he got infected. And he does have a contact who's symptomatic and is being tested. So it wouldn't be a surprise if there were two in San Diego County. And it's kind of the same situation in Colorado. The index case there is positive. He's in the National Guard. And then he had a contact who was also in the National Guard who was positive also, but they didn't have a full sequence yet. So I'm not sure when that sequence is going to pop up. But that sequence did come out today, and so did the one from San Diego. And of interest, they were both discovered the same way. And so I thought I'd go over this. I kind of mentioned it earlier in the day with the Colorado developments. But these are being identified by what's called an S dropout. And the reason it's called an S dropout, the S refers to the spike protein. And the standard PCR test has three different primers. The way the primers work is they there a sequence that will is complementary to the sequence of the virus. So they'll bind to the viral RNA, and then a polymerase will kind of extend that primer. And you really have two bracketed primers, and then the polymerase copies, uses the viral RNA as a template to copy the information between the two primers, and then you kind of heat it up so that the strands separate, and then you let it cool down, and then they use the separated strands as templates, and that's why it's called a polymerase chain reaction. It just keeps on amplifying and making more and more of that insert, and so there's enough so you can detect it in a PCR reaction if you do the cycling enough. And you can actually sequence the insert and see exactly what you got between the two primers. And the typical PCR has primers targeting three different genes. One is the N gene, or nucleocapsid gene, or makes the nucleocapsid protein. And another is the ORF 1AB, which is the open reading frame 1AB. And the third one's the spike protein. And it's located right about where position 69 and 70 are in the spike protein. And in the UK variants, there's a deletion there. There's six nucleotides that are missing, which code for position 69 and 70. So there's a six nucleotide or two amino acid deletion. And because that genetic information is not present, the primer doesn't have anything to bind to. And so it gives a negative reaction for the S gene because, is directed to a part of the S gene that isn't present in the virus, even though the rest of the S gene is there. The typical UK variant has three deletions, you know, position 69, 70, and 145. So primers directed at any of those three regions would not bind. And so without the primer, it doesn't get amplified and you get a negative results. And so the S dropouts are samples that give us a positive reaction for the primer for the N gene and a positive reaction for the primer for the ORF1A gene, but give a negative reaction for the spike gene because it's got a deletion where the primer binds. And essentially, that is how both the Colorado isolate as well as the San Diego, California isolates were identified. They both gave PCR results that had this S dropout pattern. And so once they had that on the PCR test, and they went ahead and sequenced the whole genome to find out if it had, if it was the variant. I mean, there's in Malta, all they sequenced was the S gene itself. They didn't do the whole sequence, but that was enough because it had all the mutations that were in the UK variant. And so those were easily identified there. They were exact matches of what the variant was. So those are a couple of the ways that these viruses of interest are identified. And that same pattern is actually used to show that the variant is produces more RNA. There's a paper that came out that looked at PCR results of samples in England. And you basically normally would get three different readings for each of those primers. And they're generally about, you know, equal to each other. And And what they found was that if they had a sample that gave a reading for the S gene, so it wasn't a variant, it didn't have that deletion anyway, then the viral load was lower than if it was an S dropout, where all you had was the N and the ORF1A. The N and the ORF1A are higher in the dropouts than they are when there isn't a dropout. And that's because with that deletion, that's an indication that it's a variant, and it makes more RNA. And that's why one of the reasons that, the UK variant is of concern is because there's evidence that shows that the CT scores, which the lower they are, the more RNA there is, are low, and indicating there's a lot of RNA in that sample. And that's what happened in Colorado. It was down around 10 or something, which is, that means they only have to go through, you know, 10 cycles. And the more RNA you start with, the fewer cycles you have to go through to get a detectable level. And a CT score of 10 means the RNA level is very high. And so that's how the first two in the U.S. were identified. And since the sequences came out this afternoon, they're both on the map. So the map that I've been maintaining, I think, has something like 120, 130 variant sequences. There have been so many coming out. There's a whole series from Denmark that I have to add. There's about 20 more sequences to add. But it's really closer to 130, 140 variants, not counting the ones in the countries of origin. So I'm not putting in the UK variants in the UK, and I'm not putting in the South African variants in South Africa, because South Africa's got about 400 of them, and UK has about 4,000 of them, and I put in 4,000 data points to show that it's everywhere in the UK, which everybody already knows. It's kind of a lot of work for not a major piece of information that's very novel. So just to go over what else is happening in the U.S. Is in the area of a record number of fatalities. This was once again led by California. As of 6:30 local time, there were 424 deaths reported in California. And there was a record number in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has never broken 300. They had 319 today. And then today, Texas had broke 300 also. They had 326. So you can see those three states alone combined had 1,000 deaths, 400 and something, and California 300 something, and both Pennsylvania and Texas. And then there was Illinois had 215 today, and then New Jersey had been very, very low. They were up to 175 deaths today, and New York is getting back up there again. They had 149, and Massachusetts broke 100 today. They had 120. Florida had 130. Ohio had 133. North Carolina had 155. Indiana had 109. And Tennessee had 100, and Kansas had 193, but they basically just report on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So Wednesday is really a 2-day total, but it's still 193. That's almost 100 per day, and with those types of numbers, you know, like I say, 1,000 in those top three states alone. The U.S. set a record of 3,750, which might go a little bit higher when California gives their final numbers in a few hours. So this is not unexpected. And unfortunately, this does not include the spike in cases due to Thanksgiving that takes a little while for cases to get infected and then get tested and then go into the hospital and then go into the ICU and then die and then get recorded. There's even a delay in recording the deaths. And that's why the deaths are always very low on Sunday and Monday, because they're generally given the results from the day before. So it's really Saturday and Sunday results. And whoever kind of does the final analysis to before they go into the database, I don't think works on weekends. And so, and that's pretty much across the board. And as a result, those 2 days, Sunday and Monday, are always very low on the death totals. And then they usually, even on the Tuesday, don't fully recover. But Wednesday they are, and so Wednesday is a record number, and the number of cases today was very high. Usually the cases have been a little bit on the low side because they don't do as much testing on the holidays. But today there were 239,000 new cases, and I think it's approaching 20 million now in the United States. And so that's kind of where we are with the summary, especially from the U.S. standpoint. The death toll is increasing. Hospitals are running out of actually healthcare workers. They, even if they put up temporary facilities with tents and they bring in beds, they don't have the personnel to basically man the additional beds. And so a lot of these places are, like Southern California, are at over capacity. I mean, they people in the gift shop there in some places. So they run out of space, and it's alarming because there were plenty of people that were flying around and driving around and having parties for Thanksgiving and for Christmas. And unfortunately, there'll probably be more for New Year's. And as far as getting into the ICU, they're probably just starting to get the cases that were early from Thanksgiving. And they, you know, haven't really seen the Christmas cases. I mean, they were infected. You know, they're just now being symptomatic. A lot of them haven't even been tested yet. They'll get tested, you know, between the holidays. It's, you know, it's not even a good time to get tested. So, you know, the January is going to be a disaster. I mean, December was the deadliest in the pandemic, there is no doubt that January will be worse than December, and probably, almost certainly, February will be worse than January. And if the vaccine was rolling out as it was expected to be, or I don't know if it was expected to be, as it was promised to be, still wouldn't make any difference as far as the January and probably most of February death tolls, because the vaccines require two injections. And even if you got your first injection last week, you're not going to get your second injection until next year. You're going to get it in January. And then to be fully effective, it takes a couple more weeks after that. So they're not going to really impact the cases, because the vaccines aren't given to people that are already infected, and they probably wouldn't do much good for people that are already infected. And so the people that are going to die in January are already infected, pretty much. And many of the ones that are going to die in February are already infected. So the vaccine's not going to have any impact. And it's not really clear when the rollout is going to get rolling. I think there's 16 or 20 million doses that have been distributed to the states, and there's only been a little over 2 million people that have actually had the injection. So the vaccine doesn't do much sitting in a minus 70 freezer somewhere. It stays cold, and hopefully it stays frozen so that, you know, it'll be good when it gets thawed, but it's not going to prevent any infections while frozen. So there's a lot of work to do on getting the vaccines out. Some states have actually lowered the cutoff, the recommended cutoff in this first wave is for those that are, in addition to healthcare workers and extended care facilities, there's the ones that are over 75, and some states are actually lowering that to over 70, because I think in part because they want to get as many people that are eligible and are high risk to at least get their first shot going. And if they're having trouble, you know, getting everybody lined up that's over 70 instead of turning away, I mean, over 75 instead of turning away 70-year-olds that I'm sure are eager to get the shot, they say, okay, we got to get the inventory moving and start getting the vaccine into more arms, and I'll get more takers, and I'll get that done. So, you know, I'm going to be pretty much doing these podcasts on you know, they're going to be shorter and more frequent. I'll be at all times of the day and night. When there's breaking news, I'll probably do a little bit of a commentary on each one. The map will keep on getting updated until it's out of control. So the map might not go on, I would think, in about a month or so. It'll be so covered that it won't offer that much new information. Everybody will know that the virus is everywhere by then. But I do the map both to let people know where these variants are and where these variants are not being reported. In many cases, the lack of reports is not an indication of a lack of variant. It's a lack of testing. And the U.S. does have that problem. The U.S. Would normally be kind of the leader in you know, doing sequencing and building up inventory, and they've been lagging, especially recently. Some of these are pretty abysmal on you know, what's, and the same thing's happening in Canada. I mean, looking at some of these places that are positive, you look at what the most recent samples are, other than the variant that's being reported, and you know, they're beginning in November in the U.S., there's some that, you know, go back to the summer. And it looks like in some places they're cleaning out their freezers, it looks like, or they're getting sequence data that's been sitting in a hard drive somewhere in order so they can upload it. But there's, you know, states that are putting out a lot of sequences in the last few days, but they're samples that were collected in the summer and you know, the early fall. Those, these variants are relatively new. I mean, as in something like the U.S., you're going to have trouble finding the variant on anything collected before December. And so when they send in a bunch of sequences that were collected in September and October, they're really not going to get the variants. They might get some of the precursors and see what was kind of hiding just below the surface. But then there's some other ones. I'll just throw this out before we kind of close. I'm doing this map of the variants, and I'm just covering the UK variant and the South African. Those are the two that both have the change of position 501, which is receptor binding domain, and that's probably why they're at higher titers. Is the when you change the N to a Y, in all likelihood makes for a stronger binding to the ACE2 receptor, and so the virus has an easier time of getting into the cells. And when they get into the cells, they make a lot more virus. So because they can get in easier, they can generate a higher viral load, which makes A more infectious. I think it'll have an effect so that people will get sicker. Right now, it hasn't been seen that much, but I think it's because a lot of the people that are infected are younger people. It does infect younger people. And the way the sequence goes is, younger people think they're invincible, and they're more likely to be in, social study settings like, bars or restaurants, that they think that they can congregate in groups that aren't socially distanced well, or, they're eating, they're not wearing masks, or if they're at a bar, they're drinking, they're not wearing masks. The virus can transmit fairly easily. And this virus, which these two variants that grow to higher levels, they can transmit even easier. So you get a lot of young people infected, and they are sicker than they would be without this change of position 501. But they're still young, and they're not sick enough to necessarily end up in the ICU or end up dying. And so they're using these younger ones to say, it doesn't look that bad. But what typically happens is when their viral frequency gets higher in those populations, they end up infecting their parents or grandparents, and then it moves into more vulnerable populations, and the death rates do end up going up. And so even for the UK, they're probably a little early in that cycle, because most of the sequences anyway are in November and December. There's a few that are in October, but the numbers started to take off in collections that were made in November and December. So that's kind of where we are. There's going to be a lot more variants. They go on to on the map when the sequence is published. So there wasn't any sequence in the United States until today, because the Colorado sequence was not published until today. In fact, it wasn't published until after the California sequence was published. And they both happened late this afternoon. And so the map does have the two sequenced U.S. Isolates. It's likely that there'll be contacts from each of them, which will be positive. The one in Colorado, they've already got a partial sequence, and it matches. So there's no doubt that the contact in Colorado will be another one. And then the one in San Diego is symptomatic, and there's a likelihood that that'll end up being a positive. They got this sequence out very, very quickly. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next day or two there'll be the holiday might get in the way, but they're pretty aggressive in getting this one out. Their Scripps Clinic is pretty aggressive in general. I was there and did a postdoc there and went on staff there, and a lot of competition there. So I expect those sequences to come out pretty quickly, and the first sequences of that did come out pretty quickly. And so that's it for tonight. This is, like I said, the first podcast of the last day of 2020, but there'll probably be a couple more. The sequences are coming out like crazy. And it would not be surprising if today's record of 3,750 deaths was not broken tomorrow. It'll definitely be broken in early January, but it might be broken later today, technically. I mean, it is Thursday already. So later on the 31st, of course, if people leave early, that may affect the numbers. That is what happened with Christmas Eve. Some of the labs shut down and didn't report anything on the day before Christmas, and they may not report anything on the day before New Year's. So breaking a record tomorrow or today is probably going to be difficult. But January will start off with a bang as far as cases and deaths are concerned, especially in the U.S. And the January will definitely have more cases and deaths than December, and December was a record month. So I won't say Happy New Year, because I'm sure there'll be a couple more podcasts today, but this is the first one, and I got a little more flexibility now. I'm just kind of doing the podcast so I can go ahead and do the podcast, get it uploaded, and those that are awake can listen and hear what the latest news is on the pandemic.